I found myself having to do some adjusting, and the liturgy is a great source of stability for us, at least in the spiritual life. I mean, I'm adjusting because I made a trip and my body schedule hasn't adjusted to the time zones and the days and all that. But also, we had to make an adjustment because yesterday was a great feast day, a great solemnity of St. Joseph, a great joyful feast. We had the flowers and joyful decorations here in the sanctuary. And yet in the civil calendar, it was an ordinary work day. And the office was open and people were shopping and working and going to school. Well, now today we're back to, you could say, ordinary Lent. This is a Lenten Friday, in fact, a day of abstinence, a day of penance, a day to ponder the Passion. And yet on the civil calendar, it's a holiday. So it kind of throws us off. It threw me off. I forgot about it until I was out walking this morning and there were no cars and no people around. I said, what happened? Where is everybody? Then I remembered, oh, there's no school today. And everything is shut down. Because of the Muslim feast of Eid al-Fitr, the celebration of the end of Ramadan. That's not our celebration, but we get a holiday for it. So let's make good use of it. Maybe take a little extra time for prayer. Now, I'm no expert in Islam or the meanings of the different feasts that they celebrate. I know for sure that this Eid is in celebration of the conclusion of Ramadan, which means now they can return to eating during the day. Now, I assume there's more to it than that. I mean, yes, everybody would be happy to finish fasting. I mean, we all know that experience. After a fast day is over, it's nice to be able to eat again. But I assume there's more to it than that. What I think is important for our sake, though, is to realize the big difference between our Lent and the Ramadan of the Muslims. It happened that they started on almost exactly the same time this year. So the beginning of Lent and the beginning of Ramadan coincided. And now Ramadan is one lunar month, so it's ended and Lent still goes. But when we come to the conclusion of Lent, we don't experience joy simply because we're no longer practicing self-denial. Our joy comes from the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So we're celebrating something. No matter what our brothers and sisters in Islam, whatever they're celebrating, we're certainly celebrating something greater, a cause for much greater joy. If they're rejoicing to celebrate Eid, we should have a much greater joy when we come to Easter, because we celebrate the solution to sin. We celebrate the definitive victory over death itself. What could be greater than that? That's what we're looking forward to. That's what we're preparing for in Easter. Another adjustment I had to make was to shift from the chaos of our times to the world of the Bible. And I experienced it this way. I was checking the news last night, and of course it's all news about the war in the Middle East and the escalation of it and the cost of it, both in the cost in dollars and in human lives, and the disruption of world relationships and world trade and food supply and all kinds of things. As you know, the cost of fuel has skyrocketed. So that was one thing. And then the way that the war is described in the media is it's a kind of remote control thing. I mean, it's people deciding from thousands of miles away where these bombs are going to go. And then they watch on remote screens like a video game or some kind of computer game, and then they see things blow up and they say, oh, this was a successful strike. It's a disturbing shift from like a step back from the reality of the destruction that's going on and the death and the wounding of human lives that's going on. So that's very disturbing. And a lot of it has to do with this digital communication and remote access to knowledge. So when I got to the readings, I had to make this shift. They're not In the first reading, the wicked are talking about what they're going to do to the just one. And they're talking to each other face to face, and they're thinking about what they're going to do to him. It's something very direct and personal. And then in the gospel, Jesus goes physically to Jerusalem. It goes in secret, but then he speaks openly, and the people talk with each other about what's going on. It's something refreshingly normal to have people talk, even if they're wicked, and even if they're talking about wicked things, at least they're talking to each other directly. And so I say that maybe that doesn't affect you, but I had to adjust to remember that it's a different way of communication that has come upon us now. But human nature is not different, right? Human nature has not changed. The way we communicate, even the way we think about how to communicate, has changed. But what we communicate and what we think and the brokenness of our nature, that has not changed. So once I made that adjustment, I think I found this first reading to be a very insightful description of how wicked people think. Now, a lot of wickedness in the world is not because people are wicked, but because they're stupid or they're deceived or they're weak. But there are some people who decide to be evil, and they decide on evil things. And it's important for us to understand how they think. You can see it from this reading, and this wisdom reading is very, very insightful. It's almost as if the author could read the minds of the wicked and expose what's going on in there. They're not proclaiming themselves good. They're not saying, we're the good guys and those are the bad guys and we're going to fight against them. That's the usual way we think. I'm right and he's wrong, so therefore I can attack him. No, they're saying he claims to be right and we don't like that. We don't like someone standing up and making us look bad. They're not saying they're not bad. It's as if they're claiming their wickedness. But what they don't like is to have their wickedness be opposed. So that's why they oppose the just one. The way that the wicked describe the just seems to point directly to Jesus Christ, because the just one claims to be a child of the Lord, and he holds himself aloof from wrongdoing. He himself is pure, and he won't be defiled by the impurity of the people he's correcting. He calls blessed the destiny of the just and boasts that God is his father. That's exactly what Jesus does when we get to the Gospel of John. He's not simply alluding to his being sent by the Father. He's claiming it at the risk of being accused of blasphemy. He's claiming to be the Son of the Father. So this first reading really does point to Jesus. And then it shows what the wicked will do. They're not going to dispute whether the just one is just or not. They're just going to destroy him. And here we are 2 weeks away from Good Friday, and we will see this played out on Good Friday. They have a kind of sham legal process that they go through, but it doesn't change anyone's minds. Everyone knows he's innocent. A Pilate knows he's innocent. Even the thief on the cross, the good thief, he knows he's innocent. Everybody knows he's innocent. They're just going through the motions in order to destroy him. And this is what the wicked think. Oh, we'll put him to the test. We'll see if God really takes care of him. We'll see if what he says is really true. We'll torture him. We'll put him to a shameful death. And we'll see what happens. Now, they think that if he really is good, then God will save him from the torments. But it has never dawned on them, in fact, it's hard for us to even get it, is that the very sufferings of the just one, willingly taken on, are the solution to the sins that they're committing. It's an extraordinary transcendence of this whole wicked way of thinking. And this is what it says here. These were their thoughts, but they erred. For their wickedness blinded them, and they knew not the hidden counsels of God. They didn't know how God would really work when it came to suffering. They thought that God would prevent suffering of just people. That's our natural way of thinking. They never thought that God might use the suffering of the just to overcome the sins of the wicked. Nah, they didn't know the hidden counsels of God, and they didn't count on a recompense of holiness, nor discern the innocent soul's reward. The reward of innocence is in eternal life, not in this world. So wicked people can't see beyond this world, so they're always blinded by their wickedness. Anyway, it's a great reading to ponder, not only to understand the ways of the wicked, also to recognize how wickedness creeps into our own ways of thinking, but also to see how God deals with wickedness, the marvelous way God takes on the very weapons used against him and uses them against his opponents. It's just extraordinary. And we'll be seeing this in the next 2 weeks, especially in Holy Week. Now in the Gospel, this is nowhere near Holy Week, this is John chapter 7, but the tensions have built up to the point where the Jewish authorities are intent on killing him. They're trying to figure out a way. He goes to Jerusalem anyway, because he's doing the will of the Father. He's not basing his actions on what people think of him, whether they like him or hate him. He's doing the will of the Father. And he gets there and the people start talking about him. Well, what is this? Here he is. Have the authorities realized that he's the Christ? But we know where he is from, meaning they think he's from Nazareth. Or maybe they don't even know where he's from. You know how gossip is. It usually gets distorted. When the Christ comes, no one will know where he's from. Now, I don't know where that came from. Maybe I should do a little research into this idea that no one will know where the Christ is come, because the prophecies were that the Christ would come from Bethlehem, from the house of David. He's a descendant of David. We saw it yesterday on the Feast of St. Joseph. The Messiah has to come from the house of David. That's the promise. And the town of David is Bethlehem. So why they didn't know where the Christ was going to come from, I don't know. But it's perhaps just an indication of the depth of their blindness, even of their own religious tradition. But then Jesus stands up and, scattering the darkness with light, says, oh, you know me and you know where I'm from. You don't really, but that's what you say. Yet I did not come on my own, but the one who sent me, whom you do not know, is true. Now, he's saying, you can't know me unless you know the one who sent me. You can't know me unless you know that I was sent by him. If you don't know that, you don't know anything about me. That's what he's saying here. Now, the one is who sent me is true. I know him because I am from him and he sent me. So you want to know where I'm from? I'm not from Nazareth. I'm not from Bethlehem. I'm from the Father. It's a revelation of who this Jesus of Nazareth really is. He's from the Father. Exactly what the wicked said. This just man, he boasts that God is his Father. Exactly. It's not an idle boast. It's the truth. It's the truth. And the truth is what sets us free. Well, they tried to arrest him because they were resistant to the truth. They wanted to put the just one to the test. But no one laid a hand on him, because his hour had not yet come. Things happen according to God's timing, not according to the plans of the wicked. Now, it's hard for us to see that very often. It seems to us like the wicked, or at least the ignorant and confused, are the ones in charge of what's happening. You look at the world scene, a lot of bad decisions are being made that influence the whole world. And it seems as if they're the ones making the decisions to change human history. Well, in a temporal way, yes. But actually, the hour is decided by God. That's why we can live in peace, even in a chaotic time or dangerous time. Because we trust in God. We trust in his timing. We belong to him. We do not belong to the wicked or the confused or the ignorant or the weak. We ourselves are sinners and we live in a sinful world, but we belong to God. We belong to the Father. We belong to Jesus Christ, who has come for the very purpose of setting us free from sin and death. And that's our joy as we continue our Lenten journey.